Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Fires up a three and he hits it with a foul. KPJ put him on skates and then sticks the three with a chance at a four-point play.
Butts Talk starts now.
145 to 124. The Atlanta Hawks are about to take a series from the Bucks.
And now, live from Fiserv Forum, here's Justin Garcia.
Well, not a fun one tonight inside of Fiserv Forum as the Atlanta Hawks able to get whatever they wanted offensively. And really, for the first quarter, at least, that was the story for both of these teams. I think you heard some very pointed and frustrated comments, but some very honest and transparent comments from Doc Rivers as well that, you know, this Bucks team was shooting, let's see what the exact number was, a high rate at halftime. 69% field goal percentage at halftime. 50% on threes. And they trailed 82-75. Even leaving that first quarter where at one point it was 17-19, the Bucks finished the quarter shooting 17 out of 20. Kevin Porter Jr. missed the three at the end of the quarter. They were 17-19 until then. You shot 85% in the first quarter. And you were up 7 points. It's one of those things when you see the volume of makes the Bucks were getting, the efficiency that they were finding, that margin has to be more than seven. And when you're shooting nearly 70% at halftime, you can't be trailing. But you were, because of what Atlanta was able to get in the paint, in fast break, and a familiar refrain as well, the offensive rebounds and turnovers. And not just those numbers, but what the Hawks and what recently what Bucks opponents as a whole have done with those two areas. We heard Doc Rivers talk about the way the Bucks played offensively at the start of this game was beautiful. It was perfect. It was everything you were looking for. We mentioned it on the game broadcast. You know, the aggression. The Bucks were playing downhill. They weren't settling for shots. They were getting paint touches. They had four early threes. They all came off of paint touches. Ryan Rollins getting in there, finding an open shooter. Giannis doing the same thing to lead to corner threes. And as we've seen all too much throughout the course of this season, it just slowly stopped, and it didn't for the Atlanta Hawks. And look, I still don't think the Bucks are in danger of dropping down to the 7th seed. It's still a 4-game difference there. The Hawks do have the tiebreaker now after this win tonight. But that's half your remaining schedule. There are 8 games remaining now for the Bucks, and 8 games remaining for the Atlanta Hawks. 4 games is still a lot to make up in an 8-game span, but it leaves it on the table. And it secures the Hawks from any grave danger of falling down to that 9-10 line. So this wasn't a game that Atlanta didn't need either. But I think the troubling part is the Bucks have now won 4 of their last 13 games. In those 13, they've shot 50% or better 6 times. There alone, you should figure that's at least 5 or 6 wins. The Bucks are 2-4 in those 6 games during this 13-game stretch. So the areas where they are performing better offensively and getting the right looks, it's been the defense that hasn't been good enough. So it's just been a lack of consistency during these past 13 games. And yes, the personnel and the injuries are a part of it, but there are some things you can do better. And you can clean up to make sure these things don't become an issue. We've talked about the turnovers and offensive rebound, frankly, too much already this season. But the offensive rebounding especially was big in tonight's game for a similar reason to why it was big for the Bucks. It was a heavy point of emphasis for Quinn Snyder and the Atlanta Hawks coming into this game tonight. The Bucks are certainly shorthanded in the front court. The Atlanta Hawks are too. And it was something that Quinn Snyder was very, very quick to point out before the game tonight. No Clint Capella, but it's not just Clint Capella. We're still playing without Jalen Johnson. We traded DeAndre Hunter. We have Onyeka Okongwu, who's not a 7-footer. You know, he's 6'10", if we're being generous. It's Onyeka Okongwu and a lot of 6'6" guys. This should have been a big opportunity for the Bucks to utilize the size they do have left. When you look at the starting five of Brook Lopez, Giannis, and Kyle Kuzma, this was the game where you should have been able to say, even down some of the pieces we are in the front court, we still have an advantage here, and we're going to use that. And it was not the case. The Atlanta Hawks took that advantage, and in doing so, won this game tonight in convincing fashion. 145-124. 855-616-1620. The Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. A lot to get to in this one, but unfortunately, not a lot of that is positive. 855-616-1620 is now 8 games remain for the Bucks, and you get a loss by the Detroit Pistons, but you're unable to do anything with that. So it's starting to get late pretty early now at this point of the regular season. We'll get to your thoughts. Take a look at the scores and the updated standings and what this path is for the Bucks. Also want to spend some time previewing the matchup on Tuesday. If you're coming to Milwaukee, if you're going to be here, what the intrigue is to see head coach Mike Budenholzer return with a new team that frankly is going through it just as much as the Bucks are right now. So we'll get to that conversation a little bit later in the show, but plenty to react to from tonight's loss. Again, the fourth consecutive loss for the Bucks and their ninth in their last 13 tries. We'll get to more after this on Bucks Talk. 145-124, the final score tonight inside of Fiserv Forum. The Bucks get taken out back by the Atlanta Hawks in a game that was close through the first quarter. Close at halftime, for that matter, too, with a 7-point margin. But the bigger point is it shouldn't have been. You shot nearly 90% in the first quarter and had a 7-point lead to show for it. You shot 69% through the first half and trailed by 7. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head to the phone lines and check in with our old pal Dick in Port Washington. Dick, what do you make of this? What do you make of this stretch?
It is what it is. I've got maybe a different take than what I think maybe a lot of other people do. Personally, I think this was a good loss. I think if we're going to make it out of the first round, which is questionable, and certainly our percentages to make to the finals is probably single digit. But I think that the Knicks offer us a more deliberate style, and I think we can compete better against them. I think that if we play Indiana, they'll run us out of the gym. I think that for Bucks fans, we have to realize some hard facts here. This is truly, I think, going to be the last run with any semblance of this group. I think there's going to be major changes, possibly one gigantic change during the off season. I think that holding out hope for Lillard to come back this year ain't going to happen. And I think he's at risk for having his career done. I think if you look at the history of thrombosis, you know, blood clots, even though his is distal, The treatment for this isn't conducive to play
for a couple of
pro sport.
Yeah,
I think that he's going to have to make some decisions as to is it worth competing in this? You know, you throw into your heart, you could have a widowmaker pretty quickly. So I think that's there's a strong possibility he might be done. If he does come back, I don't know. The treatment is almost as bad as having it for someone in this position. So I think the only hope you can have, and probably whistling past the graveyard, is that you get the Knicks and their deliberate style. We get Portis back. Maybe things can change, but don't forget, he's missed 25 games. How long is it going to take him to get back within the group? How is he going to play with Kuz? There's a lot of questions there, but I do think with a more deliberate style playing against us, we do have a chance. And then after that, and this is my heart thinking, not my brain, is that if you can make it through the first round, in, I think anything else can happen. But I guess I'm Dickie Downer again, but what? I think the reality is there. And I challenge anyone to challenge what I've just said.
I'm with you on the playoff matchup. I left that game Friday night, and I know the Bucks lost, and I know Doc made the comments, too, of, look, the rebounds in some of the other areas, they have done this to us three times, and, you know, they now believe they're the tougher team than we are. And if we see them in the playoffs, that's something that you're going to have to change. You're going to have to set the tone there. But I left that game, and I think the shame of that game, and it's not just the Bucks, the Knicks as well, playing without Jalen Brunson, you didn't see both of those teams with their full personnel available. Just to see the moves the Bucks made at the deadline, I do think it puts you in a better spot to play against the Knicks and match up with them when you think about a guy like Kyle Kuzma and defensively what that allows you to do to throw out there on other guys. Before, what the Bucks had was basically, if you looked at Towns, if you looked at guys like OG Anunoby, it was slowly one by one, well, Giannis? Could we put Giannis on him? Could we put Giannis on him? You don't have five Giannises. So you've at least addressed that somewhat. Look, I'm not going to argue it's a good thing to not have Damian Lillard. But the one thing, especially if you get the Knicks, and it would be no different with the Indiana Pacers, or not quite as different, is your defensive point guard. That you bring on more size with Ryan Rollins. You bring on a lot more defensive ability than you have with Damian Lillard. Granted, you're going to lose a lot offensively, but I'm not suggesting Ryan Rollins would shut down Jalen Brunson. I think you feel better with that matchup. So there are some things I like there, and I agree with you. I think Indiana is really starting to look a lot like the team we saw, even with some of the breaks they caught in the playoffs in terms of injuries. Indiana's starting to piece it together and look really, really good of late. Their matchups, the pace that they play at, it's just not one that, even though the numbers show you won three or four games this season, that one loss came on a four-point play by Tyrese Halliburton. It's still one that I think is a great matchup for the Bucks.
No, and I think Arma seems to be with them in the winning these overtime games. When we were up one game on them, if they drop three of those, we're talking a whole different story here.
Yeah.
And one thing I really agree with you is that, and I wish we had Dame, but, you know, I think making up for offensive contributions is easier than making up for defensive liabilities. You know what I'm saying? I agree with you that I think a bigger guard on Brunson, make him work harder, or anybody else that we face is easier to make up. It's harder to make up than distributing points to other players on the team. You know, if we can get our 3-point shooting back, that can come back very quickly. And Kuz is really starting to find himself. Even though with my pessimistic statements here, if we can get past the first round, then we're going to revisit this. That's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, look, and as we've learned the last 2 years, it's a big if, right? You're once again dealing with injuries, and thanks for the call, Dick. You're dealing with injuries. You're dealing with what Dame is going through right now. I agree with you, and we've made the point on this show a number of times. Look, I don't think you can plan on Damian Lillard playing this season. If he does, great. I would love to be proven wrong, but with blood clots, deep vein thrombosis, the history, and even the recent history of players that have had this, it's not weeks. It's months, and I get every situation is different, and you can point out everything that we've heard and that everybody's been quick to research, too. Well, it was lower in the foot for Damian Lillard, and that's typically a good thing, and they caught it early. I get that. It's typically something that, you know, in the case of Chris Bosh, he never returned. But you think back to Asar Thompson with the Pistons last year. I believe his were in January, and I get it. The Pistons were not a good team. He didn't return that season. Victor Wembanyama, weeks ago, he was ruled out for the rest of the season. We've seen more and more of it lately, and it's not a weeks thing. It is typically a month's thing. So your approach and your mindset has to be, we are going forward without Damian Lillard until told otherwise. And hopefully that otherwise does occur. But you can't be waiting on Superman in the sense of Damian Lillard is going to be back and that's what's going to help our offense once we get to the postseason. I do agree with the point, too, of, look, get through the first round, and then it becomes interesting, especially if you can get Damian Lillard back. You're talking about playing with those two guys. You win, you get out of the first round, which here we are now, 4 years after winning the championship, talking about the struggles of getting out of the first round. But that's the hand the Bucks have been dealt here. And you're still, what is it, three games back of the Indiana Pacers with this loss tonight? So it's starting to feel more and more like the Pacers are going to be the four seed. And it's going to come down to, are you going to be playing the Pacers or the Knicks in the first round? Will you be the five seed or will you be the six seed and not have home court advantage in either of those two series? Those two games against Detroit are going to be looming very, very large here down the stretch. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. See a handful of reactions popping up here in the chat. We'll address those questions. I mentioned I do want to take a look at that matchup with the Phoenix Suns on Tuesday night. We'll get to that as well after this on Bucks Talk. Bucks take one on the chin tonight against the Atlanta Hawks, 145-124. Dick in Port Washington just said single-digit chance of a championship for the Bucks, and the latest here gives the Bucks a 6% chance of reaching the conference finals and a 1% chance of reaching the NBA finals. For comparison, the Indiana Pacers have a 9% chance at winning the reaching the conference championship. Pistons have a 7% chance, so you're at least in the neighborhood of those two teams. Everything is weighted towards the Thunder, the Cavaliers, and the Boston Celtics. After that, a pretty significant drop-off for all teams. But, you know, look, I think that's a good point, too, that Dick brought up about the returns that we're waiting on here. You can't necessarily lump Damian Lillard in there. If it happens, great. That's not quite as tangible. But Bobby Portis, there's going to be an adjustment. Playing more with Kyle Kuzma. There was a handful of those games after the deadline, but you didn't get that post-All-Star break, and that's when you started to see more and more of Kyle Kuzma. Comfort to some extent. Their doctor said it's still not quite there. So what adjustment is there? When and if Jericho Sims makes his return leading up to the playoffs and in the playoffs, how does that work with Bobby Portis and the rest of the group as well, and what's the adjustment there as well? Tonight was interesting because we heard Doc Rivers before the game mention the names of Andre Jackson Jr. and Pete Nance and said, look, you know, we're down the guys that were down. We're still playing without Damian Lillard. We are now without A.J. Green tonight. You're still down those two pieces in the front court that we mentioned. So we're going to need more guys, you know, and talked about the Knicks game and a couple other games coming off of a road trip, but that Knicks game especially, coming off of that road trip. Do we need to play more guys and move past just playing these eight guys to start to save some legs and bring our guys back, ease them into the mix from that road trip? They didn't. And it was one of the things that Doc said I really second-guessed and kicked myself over and mentioned Andre Jackson Jr. and Pete Nance as two names of one of those guys is going to play tonight. It was Andre, but we did not see it until very, very late in the third quarter. And even in the first quarter, we were talking about this off the air, but as you were seeing things unfold, I just couldn't help but wonder at what point do you have to turn to Ajax here? Because we've talked about before, there is a lot of good that Torian Prince gives you, and certainly the corner threes and the three-point shooting as a whole is a big piece of that. One of the best in the league. But some of these matchups seem to indicate you need a guard back there to take on some of these defensive assignments. And you started the game with Torian Prince on Trae Young. it took a handful of possessions. It was still midway to early in the first quarter before we saw Doc Rivers or whoever it was, if it was Greg Buckner or whoever on staff, made the call to let's put Ryan Rollins on him. That wasn't really working. Trae Young controlled the game. 19 points, 19 assists. The threat of Trae Young's playmaking is what opened up a lot of doors for Atlanta and changed the game for them. We saw Giannis coming out. You saw a number of times where they were just trying to get the ball out of Trae Young's hands. And it was either Ryan Rollins, Gary Trent Jr., Taurean Prince, whoever it was that had the primary assignment, Kevin Porter Jr. on Trae Young was out there to meet him. Giannis would come over, try to trap and get the ball out of his hands. You didn't want Trae Young to kill you with a three-pointer, with the floater, or with his passes and decision-making. But unfortunately, as you're navigating these waters with just Giannis and Brook Lopez as your bigs, more often than not, other than the first couple of minutes of the game, and if it's close, the last few minutes of the game, Giannis and Brook aren't going to be on the floor together for extended periods of time. So when you do that, it leaves you vulnerable to your backline defense. And that's what we saw Trae Young and the rest of the Hawks picking apart. That I was a little surprised that we didn't see Andre Jackson Jr. earlier in this game for those defensive reasons. I would assume, and we got somewhat of an answer on it from Doc Rivers. The one thing that we did get that I do agree with Doc on is the armchair quarterback thing, the backup quarterback, his quote, the backup quarterback thing, I don't play that game. You know, like just because something happened doesn't mean if we do this, it won't happen. You know, just because the backup didn't play doesn't mean, hey, we're better off if he does. And I agree with that. But I think you could see early in this game, and Doc pointed this out afterwards too, the shooting percentages. How many times we've mentioned you're shooting nearly 90% in the first quarter. That lead cannot be 7. It has to be closer to 20 or more when that's the rate of success you're having offensively. Halftime, you're shooting nearly 70%. You're trailing by 7. That just speaks to the defense. And where those breakdowns were occurring was the same spots that you were finding success in that first quarter. When you scored 44 points and, again, nearly shot 90%, you were getting paint touches. You were winning at the point of attack. They could not contain the ball. They being the Atlanta Hawks, they could not keep it in front of them. You're playing aggressive. You're playing downhill. And we heard Doc afterwards say, you know, the way we started the game, it was beautiful. It was everything we had coached. We would went over on film. We were looking for offensively. And it just kind of lost in the third quarter. The way we started that quarter to come out flat in that spot we were in, that's where it was lost. So, again, I may be contradicting myself. I agree with Doc on the whole backup quarterback thing is listening to the show. I don't love having it either. But I just wonder if it was just the mix of same things we've talked about with Andre Jackson Jr. and Giannis on the floor. Like, was the big stumbling block tonight looking at, well, if we run into Giannis and Kuzma and Andre Jackson Jr. on the floor at the same time, we may be helping our defense, we're putting our offense in an even bigger hole here. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. And I will say, this was another, I thought, good game from Pat Connaughton. And Doc talked about this before the game as well, in that, you know, some of the things that this group has not been doing of late is stuff that Pat Connaughton does. He gets in the paint. He moves the ball. He moves without the ball. He has those intangibles, and those are all the things that this group has been missing lately, and I think you started to see that early in this game especially. Unfortunately, the lead ballooned for Atlanta, and that was really offset, but some very, very important minutes from Pat Connaughton here tonight to help out this team, to keep the ball moving and to just get those paint touches and move without the ball. That is more often than not what is ailing this Bucks offense. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We'll get to the questions that we have coming out of this game. Also, take a look at that matchup with the Phoenix Suns. We'll take a look at the return of Mike Budenholzer Tuesday nights here in Milwaukee. We'll touch on that next on Bucks Talk. Well, not a fun one tonight inside of Fiserv Forum as the Bucks really get manhandled down the stretch of the final three quarters in this one and lose to the Atlanta Hawks 145-124. Most points the Bucks have surrendered in a game this season. And up next, got the Phoenix Suns coming to town. So Phoenix right now is 35-39. They are a full game back of the Sacramento Kings for the 10 seed, final spot in the play-in tournament. And the Suns are currently playing, hosting the Houston Rockets, a game the Phoenix Suns, through three quarters, are losing by 39 points to the Rockets. So Phoenix is going to be headed to a 35-40 record when they come into Milwaukee. They will have a three-game losing streak. The Bucks will have a four-game losing streak. And the last win the Suns had was when they beat the Bucks back there in Phoenix. This loss is going to drop the Suns two games back of the Kings in the loss column, making it incredibly tenuous for a team with the expectations they had, for a team that started the season 8-1. Do the math there. 27-39 since that 8-1 start to the season. When the Bucks played the Suns, what, a week ago, last Tuesday in Phoenix, there were no questions from Milwaukee reporters to Mike Budenholzer. Now, I obviously was not there, but I did have multiple people tell me, no, we were in the room. We were not called upon to ask questions of Mike Budenholzer. Now, how much of that was the Suns PR staff? Was it Bud specifically who went into deciding who gets to ask these questions? Remains to be seen. What I do know is that media relations staff travels with Phoenix. It's going to be the same group here in Milwaukee on Tuesday night. It's going to be a little more hard to avoid, as you'll have fewer local reporters and a lot more Milwaukee media here. And it's going to be something that's tough to avoid. I get Mike Budenholzer not wanting to turn the pregame press conference into reflect on your time in Milwaukee when they got a game to prepare for and an important game that they need in the standings. He's going to have the same feeling on Tuesday. If there are no Milwaukee questions and you know, other than the surface level, it was a great 5 years. I can't think about it right now. If there's none of that, it really does lead you to question. I would assume Bud is going to get an overwhelmingly positive response by the fans here when he is introduced as the head coach of the Phoenix Suns. He is one of two head coaches to have won a championship for this franchise. But look, as frustrating as losses like tonight are for the Bucks, think about the Phoenix Suns and think about what Bud is dealing with. They're below 500 with an even larger payroll and luxury tax that they're paying out now. And you're starting to hear talk about his job, potentially three summers in a row that the Phoenix Suns may fire their head coach. So it sets up for a very, very interesting return to Milwaukee on Tuesday night. And really, a scenario surrounding both teams I don't think any of us foresaw when that schedule came out in August. We'll get to your questions and wrap up the show after this on Bucks Talk. 24. The bad guys beat the good guys tonight. Not the result we hoped for. And especially frustrating when you shoot nearly 90% in the first quarter and only have a 7-point lead to show for it. Shoot nearly 70% through the first half and are trailing by 7. But stop me if you've heard this before. Offensive rebounding, turnovers, and transition play, fast break points. The story in this one tonight is the Hawks just run through the Bucks, sending them to their fourth straight defeat, looking to snap that streak Tuesday night against a familiar face in Mike Budenholzer and the Phoenix Suns. I would assume there's a lot of positivity in the comments section tonight, Matt. So what do we got?
Well, I want to start with this one about the game specifically tonight. Sidovsky in the YouTube chat says, when you put TP, Torian Prince, as a starting two despite continually losing and assign him to defend Trae Young, this is a choice. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, we talked about it a little bit before in that I forget what game it was, but I remember having a similar conversation and asking, like, do you almost need an approach of two starting lineups? Like, Taurean Prince has been, especially for his contract and a guy that you got on the vet minimum, very good, very productive for this Bucks team. I don't think anyone is disputing that, but it's you would much rather play him as a three and an undersized four than you would out there on the perimeter, and especially in matchups like this where you're asking him to take on Trae Young. And, hey, Thursday, you may have a Tyrese Maxey in that game and asking Taurean Prince, hey, take Tyrese Maxey. Like, those are the tough matchups where, you know, to go back to what we said before, I was a little surprised that you didn't go to Andre Jackson Jr. earlier in those matchups and say, okay, Ajax is going to take this. I think one of the problems in saying, do you need two starting lineups, where if you're playing that type of a guard, you start somebody else in the backcourt. I think the problem in tonight's game specifically is we would all advocate for Gary Trent Jr. to be that guy, but with no A.J. Green, if you're starting Gary Trent Jr., then it starts to get really thin in the backcourt. But, yeah, it was notable, and I think it did have a rather large impact in this game. Was, you know, it wasn't all on Taurean Prince, because we saw Doc Rivers made the switch and went to Ryan Rollins taking that assignment midway through the opening quarter.
I went back and forth on this one, but I think it's how a decent amount of fans are feeling. Dislike Kiddo said, how many times are the Bucks going to run it back and blame injuries as an excuse? Obviously, it's not the Bucks blaming injuries as an excuse, but if we're healthy, when we're healthy, it's a never-ending cycle. It just has to be broken at this point. I imagine a lot of fans, you know, the kind of pessimistic view is we're going into another series, if Dame's not playing, where it's another year of, you know, this guy didn't play, that's why we lost. How do you kind of build up hope for this team's playoff run despite that?
Build up hope? Well, I mean, you still have Giannis, which is the hope part. But his larger point is, I mean, it's a difficult one because I agree with a lot of it. I think what clouds your judgment is your attachment to the team and to Giannis and, you know, the old what's the definition of insanity. And 2022, the unfortunate part was I think the Bucks get through the Celtics. I do believe they win a championship again, that they had the best team. Chris Middleton goes down on that wet spot on the floor against the Chicago Bulls in game two. And, you know, the Bucks to get it to seven games against Boston when you had the offensive issues that you did was tough. But if you're healthy, I still think that's the best team in the league. That's the one I'm willing to entertain and say, clearly, injuries were a huge story here. First round loss to the Miami Heat the following year. Look, Giannis goes down in game one and missed, game and a half, two and a half games in that series. That is a big piece. Right? If you don't have a 100% Giannis on the floor for every single game, that's going to change the outcome of a series. But there was just a lot going on with that team when you think about the tragedy that Mike Budenholzer was dealing with off the court that he learned about right as his team is taking the floor in game four in Miami. And to say that Giannis getting hurt on that charge that Kevin Love drew is the reason why they lost that series, as much as we want to hate him, is a big disservice to the Miami Heat and what they did and how they executed in that series. As the series progressed, it became clear the Miami Heat were just the better team and the tougher team in that series, and they showed it throughout a run to the conference finals. Last year, you had a lot of warts throughout the season, but you had more data points that you could point to and say, look, for all the doubt and the pessimism surrounding this team, their five-man starting lineup, when Malik Beasley was in there, which did change down the stretch of the season, but their five-man starting lineup was the best in the league. They were one of the better teams in the league against the top 10 teams in the league. They picked up some nice wins along the way. You look at the way they just bullied the Oklahoma City Thunder, what, a week before Giannis goes down with that injury. There were more of those moments and more of those data points you could really highlight and say, this is your optimism. This is your reason for hope, and this is the data that suggests this team is at that level. And then the Giannis injury occurs, and then Dame goes down, and you never really got a chance to see if that was in fact the case. So there is validity to it. I think it's a fine line between what is a reason and what is an excuse. But the larger part of all of this is, like I said before, the definition of insanity. And if we go on to, you know, year four of talking about injuries, deciding how deep this team goes in the playoffs or cutting short a playoff run, maybe, and I haven't really dug into this yet. I think it'll be a good exercise for the last week of the season. I haven't dug into it yet, but maybe the Bucks have dealt with a lot more in terms of injuries to their best players these last 4 years than other teams have. But all teams deal with this. Maybe not Giannis and Dame out. Maybe not losing Giannis 1 year, losing Dame the next year, but all teams deal with injuries, and there are especially more of them in the postseason to star players a season ago. So the Bucks are not alone here, and I think that's part of the question or the comment and what's coming through is, look, it's not like the Bucks are the only team that gets injuries. So to go on four straight years where we're saying, yeah, if only they were healthy, I think the larger point that they're trying to make is there's got to be more than just hope for health. Like, maybe you have to reevaluate, and I think that's what the trade deadline was, reevaluating the construction of this roster, but maybe some more of that is what we're in store for in this summer.
One more from you, also from Dislike Kiddo. He says, it is too easy to scheme for Giannis without Damian Lillard in a playoff series. I immediately disagree with that. As you just said, that's the reason for hope with the Bucks. Earlier in Giannis' career, you know, obviously there was the Raptors series where that was the story. They built the wall down low and whatever. But what do you think in terms of this year's playoff run? Is it too easy to scheme for Giannis without Dame?
Well, look, we saw it tonight. And we've seen a lot more of it lately here that, like, Giannis will have some big games because Giannis is one of the best players in the world. But what you're really seeing, and if Atlanta was able to do this with Quinn Snyder openly admitting before the game, look, Onyeka Okongwu, he's not a seven-footer. He's 6'9", I think. Like, he was listed at 6'10", 6'11", which is very generous. He's not a seven-footer. We don't have Clint Capella available. We don't have Jalen Johnson, even. It's basically Onyeka Okongwu and a bunch of guys that are 6 foot six. Muhammad Gay is 6'10 or so, but not a whole lot of size when you talk about building a wall. And the Hawks were able to do it. You're going to see, without Damian Lillard, more and more teams are just going to say, just trap Giannis. Just build a wall. Just say, if your shooters hit shots, your shooters hit shots. Like, if we lose to the Bucks because Gary Trent Jr. knocked down seven threes or Kevin Porter Jr. had a 30-point game, so be it. But we're not going to lose to the Bucks because Giannis is taking over. We're not going to go one-on-one or even two-on-one on Giannis. We're going to build a wall and say, no, get it out of his hands early and make the other players hit shots, which is where guys like Bobby Portis will become very, very important to get them back on the floor, because you know what you get from Bobby Portis. And as we said, you know, with other guys along the way, like, you've done enough. It's tough. I recognize it's tough to make this point tonight after you gave up 145 points, but you've done enough defensively with this roster that you're in a better spot than some of the questions that existed with Bobby Portis. They've been minimized now with the help and the personnel that you have around him. But you just need more offense on the floor. It's the exact opposite of where it was a season ago when you were winning games because you had Giannis and Damian Lillard, and you were just out-talenting team. You had no defensive help, and it was just this constant search of who is going to help us out defensively. I mean, Pat Beverly, who's not even in the league, ended up starting for this team down the stretch because that's how much help they needed defensively, and it's just been a total 180 this season. So it should be back of mind. I'm not sure how elevated the concern level is yet or what number you would assign to it, but I do get the logic of, look, teams are going to scheme a certain way and just say, we're going to pack the paint against Giannis and, you know, everybody's favorite conversation, the 16 versus 82 player. Are you a playoff shooter? Are you a regular season shooter? We're going to find out with some guys that haven't gotten quite as many opportunities so far, because you get the sense, if Damian Lillard is not on the floor in the playoffs, those are the types of looks those guys are going to get throughout this postseason run. Tuesday night should be an interesting one here, as both teams looking to snap a losing streak. The Suns looking to end a three-game skid. The Bucks, more importantly, looking to snap a four-game losing streak. And it is the return of Mike Budenholzer to Milwaukee. His first time back here since Game 5, when the Bucks lost in that first-round series to the Miami Heat. So it should be an emotional night, and hopefully it is a celebratory night for the Bucks on Tuesday night. 6:30 tip time on Tuesday. 6 o'clock is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk with you then.